Dad Bod, Rap Pod, we are back. This is episode 124. Unlike some podcasts, we do not have numbering schemes. This is literally the 124th time that we've sat down to record this shit. My name is Damon Carter, aka Dim One. I am joined in the temple of Zoom by Mr. Nate LeBlanc. Salt and pepper's here.
Salt and pepper's here. It is in my beard.
How's it going?
Oh, you know, it's okay. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Monday, bro.
It really is.
Recording on a Monday. And also with us on the line, broadcasting live from the depths of Santa Clara, we have Mr. David Ma. How's it going?
Hey, guys. Good to be here. Second day of summer, millionth day of pandemic. So
yeah, pretty much.
I've lost
That's
count.
Right.
Episode 124. Here we go.
124, baby. We have a dope interview lined up for you guys in just a little bit with Jake One, who is a super cool cat. You guys are going to really enjoy this interview. Also, we have a guest that's going to be joining us at any minute. This is going to be like some Three's Company shit where people just fall through like all the time, like every 5 minutes.
Pop in.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
so
funny.
We,
I hadn't thought of it like that.
We are going to have Mr. Furley's going to pop in do a little interview with us. No, we'll have Gary Suarez, freelance writer, music journalist, is going to join us to kind of chop it up about all the current events going on in the world of hip hop. But we are here right now, like David said, the second day of summer. If I could place a bet that we will be back on Strong Shelter in Place by like October, November, I would put money on that. I would put a good deal of money on that right now. You're saying sooner? You're going sooner. September?
We're just pretending it's over.
Right.
Yeah.
We're just talking about
nothing changed.
Yeah.
If anything, it's gotten a little bit worse.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what's
more out. The only reason it was down is we were inside.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been very interesting to see folks just kind of pick up as if nothing happened. I'm definitely of two minds on it. The expectation that people were gonna just stay in their houses forever, and not go out, and like not everybody can do that. Number one, everybody's living situation is different. But the fact that you thought the bars and the club thing was not going to come back, like more than anything, people want to drink and interact. And like these folks are willing to risk on a regular night. They're ready to risk their lives. So if you've ever been to Tres Gringos, so, so it's not surprising, but I'm like, yeah, enjoy your summer. Cause the fall we're going to be right back. Although this changes nothing for us in this space.
Right. I don't know if you guys saw, I was having a Twitter conversation with someone. It really annoys me that the Zoom episodes, now that we've got it locked, actually sound better than when I'm like live and twiddling all these knobs I don't know how to use.
Oh, man.
It's just louder, and it actually mixes it in the software, so it's like their ears are way better than mine.
We're leveraging new technology to do what we
do. I wonder if we're going to do the interviews this way when we're live again. You know what I mean? Like, would that make sense?
Well,
a little bit, and everybody's learned how to use it.
I think that would be good, as long as they're willing to do so. Most people just don't want to. But I know that for Heat Rocks, that they're always like, "Yo, we have to do it face to face, Zoom or what was the thing before?
Skype.
Yeah. So and it does really help with obviously the timing of the conversation. So.
That's true. Our jail phone interviews definitely stepped up because of, I think, Zoom and being able to see folks that we can see and kind of interact in that space. Also, I feel like I got to put on a shirt and kind of have my hair together. And I feel like when I do that, I show up better. You know what I mean? Like knowledge agreed. That I will be seen. So
it's actually funny. It's like literally going to be laundry day tomorrow. This is my last t-shirt. It's like an extra schmedium hip hop 45 shirt that I actually don't even wear anymore. I'm just like, okay, this is the bottom of the drawer.
Nate rocking the Beanie Man special, which we totally appreciate. It's been an interesting week. While we were recording, our episode last week for 123, a gentleman by the name of Jermaine something or other recorded a song called, or recorded, released, or released a song called Snow on the Bluff, which was apparently taking a shot at a rapper who we all like a whole lot for a number of reasons, No Name. And there was a kind of an attendant firestorm on the internet around that, and kind of, you know, I saw multiple kind of think pieces about it and things. Almost ancient history, except for the fact that I saw today No Name has come out and said she wished she hadn't replied to that.
Right. Her reply about her song was even greater. It even lifted it up more. It was like, she was like, yo, you know, that was sort of a gut reaction, and maybe I shouldn't have taken the focus away from the movement and stuff. And yeah, it was just like, fuck, you won again.
Yeah. Yeah. Super, super, super smart. I thought her, well, she said, I guess her statement was, I let my ego get the best of me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you're a rapper. We kind of, your ego was supposed to get the best of you. Like, that's the kind of whole bit. But she's towing this interesting line right now with being a, I don't want to, an activist kind of celebrity person who's trying to do the right thing in the moment. So
yeah, a leader.
A leader. Yeah, trying to get out there and lead. On the line, I believe we have our guest for this portion of the episode. I'm going to do an intro and hope that he's actually on the line. We have on the line in the tip of the Zoom, Gary Suarez, who is a freelance hip hop writer. You might have saw his stuff in Forbes. He also has a hip hop newsletter called Cabbages, and be talking a gang of shit on Twitter. I enjoy following his account. How's it going, man?
Yo, there he is.
How's it going, man? How's it going, fellas? What's going on?
Enjoying you for joining us from
fine dining.
Fine dining establishment. You know, the service in here is terrible, but you know, it's just phase two here in New York. So.
I was he's calling us from the Irishman. Like, what's happening in there?
Exactly.
Visual jokes.
It's really helpful. I'm glad that we should keep all the conversation very visually focused, because I assume this is an all audio podcast.
Definitely is, and yes. I just did a 5-minute bit about the shirt I'm wearing, so it's all on brand.
You guys understand the medium. I respect that.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us here in this conversation. We just kind of cracked the can open on the whole J. Cole. No Name stuff. We saw today that No Name has come out and said she regrets her reply. You were the center of some viral hotness that had nothing to do with Corona for your for the tweet you had.
For a change, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Have you been getting assailed by J. Cole stans all weekend? What has that been like?
Well, they're not as internet savvy as you think, which is probably the first bit. A lot fewer. The response to the bookcase tweet, which I think, just for context, I don't like to joke explain, but it was just J. Cole fans be like, and it was basically a mock-up of a bookcase that once you looked out inside, it was just a cardboard cutout. More people resonated with that. Again, we're going to keep talking about visuals this whole fucking time. Like, we're going to talk about shirts. We're going to talk about bookcases that you don't know exist. I assume we could just do hot links in the middle of this. Just people can like click off and
yeah, send them into the
see
chat.
This tweet.
We'll just talk about them. Absolutely.
Maybe when you do the thread on this, it'll just show up. Here's the shirt he was wearing. And there we go.
It's not a bad idea.
No, so yeah, so the response was very few overall J. Cole stans in terms of the angry. There are plenty who are like, I'm a fan and I think this is funny, or I'm a fan and I don't agree with this, but fine. And then many more people who are just like, this is hysterical. The sad case is when there were people who would openly say, I don't get it. And that just sort of adds
the point.
To... Okay, it's like, okay, then you're definitely a J. Cole fan,
right?
You don't get it. All right, that's all right.
I love it when people make my point for me.
Oh my goodness,
It felt like parody of Ted. Like, am I being punked? Like, is somebody just like fucking with me? I know, like, I know there's always like cultural barriers and stuff that goes through. So it's just like, you know, humor is not universal as much as we want it to be. Like, we have a Western idea of what humor is, but just J. Cole fans being kind of light.
Yeah.
That's universal. That's something we can all agree on.
We didn't weigh in really on the controversy around J. Cole and No Name when it kicked off, because we were recording our show right then with Arm & Hammer, and we just didn't really realize it had happened until in internet time. We're now 10 years after that, and in that moment we were 10 seconds after it. It would have been late to the joke, but I'd never actually listened to the J. Cole song. Did anyone on the call listen to the J. Cole song?
I read the transcript. I did.
I did. It typifies J. Cole for me, which I was barely awake by the end.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I've listened as well. I listened as well, and I think the criticism that has been levied at him, not just by me, but largely by Black women, was very legitimate as a result of that. It was a pretty clear case of him targeting an artist far less powerful than him.
Sure.
Using the most powerful weapon he has, which is his music. If he had said something on Twitter, had engaged her on a dialogue on there, I'm not saying I would have loved that, because it still feels like, what the fuck is this your place to say anything in this situation? But I guess you could make an argument for that. But he chose to approach it the way rap beef works. And so that's part of what infuriated me about it, was that he couched this in the familiar of rap beef. Mm-hmm. And then did this elaborate gaslighting afterwards, less than a day later, that like, oh, well, I stand behind everything I said. Maybe I was right. Maybe I was wrong. But I love No Name.
Right.
It was such a dick move that I'm sure many of those who criticized him, particularly women and Black women, clearly saw right through.
Yeah.
For sure.
And it's such a weird target at this particular time. It kind of takes me back to when Jay-Z sold Kaepernick down the river. And you're just kind of like, of all people to point your attention at and try to be like, this person is in the wrong. No Name stopped rapping to start a book club.
Right.
I'm like, J. Cole, if you wanted to get educated, join the book club. Like, she gave you a lane to get up to speed on these issues. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting. What did you think of No Name's response?
I thought her response was brilliant on so many levels. I mean, first, I don't want to say I'm a scholar of rap beef, but I am a student of rap beef.
Okay.
And I have rarely seen the case where somebody goes in such a surgical manner in such a short period of time for such a fire beat.
Right. Like,
if you're going to come back at J. Cole, I don't know who produced that J. Cole original. I don't produce who produced that track. And no one's really ever going to care who produced that track.
Right, right.
But
right.
Everybody knows Madlib produced.
I know.
No Name's response. Madlib, as in Madlib.
Yeah.
Like, it's like Inception or whatever the fuck Tenet's going to be about when it comes to how you respond in these situations. I'm just going to get the best beat maker alive and he's going to give me 69 seconds of his time to just let me whomp you. It's beautiful.
Yeah, it was really loved her response. I mean, loved the track musically too. It was kind of simplistic, but I liked it as a song. She sounded good on it. The beat was
interesting because she doesn't have that many songs. Like, she's got the kind of stuff she did as, like, No Name Gypsy. She's got a little bit of stuff with Saba and those guys. And then she's got Telephone and Room 25. So she's, like, this will probably be the most notoriety that she has had up until this point in her career. Though it is interesting when we've interviewed a lot of older heads, like I remember Prince Paul saying this, and maybe Gift of Gab and a couple of others, when we asked what modern rappers they were into, a lot of them said No Name. Mm-hmm. I think Telephone in particular really resonated with people. So I wonder if this is like actually really good for her. It's kind of a long way around for me to say that, but like, it's not, she's not just an activist, though she is a leader in that space. She's a fucking rapper and she rapped her ass off. So it's pretty interesting the way this is kind of going for her. I would say it's going great for her.
I mean, yeah. I would counter and that while I think it's it for her reputation, I mean, her people who've come to her defense and those who have kind of come out and spoken favorably of her include some folks who you definitely want to have in your corner. Mm-hmm. But like, look at how she's presenting this publicly. She retracted essentially the song, or expressed that she felt bad about it, that she felt that she had been a distraction in the situation. And ultimately, she's apologized for having done so. So while I've heard that argument about how this could be good for her in the long run and be, you know, has be a quite momentous part occasion in her career, which I hope lasts a very long time. It also seems to be a particularly hard time for her. This isn't just like, you know, when, you know, Meek Mill went after Drake and got washed thoroughly.
Right.
No, it's just like she's clearly devastated that the work she's been trying to do and the consensus she's been trying to build online with like-minded people to bring in may not necessarily be in her corner. And whether that's true or not, that's how she feels. And I think that's a product of Cole's ridiculous effort of, one, attacking her in an unprovoked way, then gaslighting her about the whole thing, and then his fan base saying, well, it wasn't beef to begin with. So why is it not beef? Why does that mean that that's what she did was not a diss track, that his wasn't a diss track and hers wasn't a diss track? They have that little respect for her as an artist and as a rapper, that's how they feel. So I feel like it's a moment where he wins in the ugliest of ways. I hope that this leads to good things for her, but I can't in this moment see it that way because it seems like she's hurting, and that's not right.
That's super interesting and very empathetic of you.
A rare thing for me. I am not known for my empathy.
I didn't catch a lot of the apology stuff today. I just had a super busy day at work, but yeah, super interesting. But let's talk about cabbages. you have a newsletter that I look forward to reading every Sunday, and you have a kind of an expansive view of what matters in modern rap. And personally, I knew you for a couple of things, including MWE, which I want to talk about later. But I kind of thought of you more as like an Urbano journalist. I didn't know you were such a hip hop head. So it's been refreshing to like see your take on things. And sometimes it aligns pretty closely with ours. And like, we'll have a guest and you'll have them on Cabbages either the same week or like a week later. So it's been kind of cool in that way too, but just please, like for the benefit of the audience, like tell people why a newsletter, why now, and what's up with it?
I mean, so, and I apologize if you hear fireworks going on in the background, because this is Queens and we got fireworks.
I believe it.
Same.
Okay, so you know. So yep. Basically, I've been writing for a long time. I've been writing for about 20 years. Not necessarily writing for places that anybody read, but I've been writing for 20 years.
Okay.
And as a result, I've seen a lot in this industry, and I've always done this from the perspective of a freelancer. I've never been a staff writer anywhere. You know, I've never worked in any of these horribly toxic environments that we're all hearing about right now. Mm-hmm. I've always been on my own. And so for better or worse, that's developed certain skill sets in me. And as I watch this industry collapse in on itself, both by kind of vulture capitalism that's crushing these institutions, terrible decision-making, like believing about Facebook's pivot to a video approach, which is, for some reason, they still don't fucking get it. They're still doing it. So I said to myself late last year, I said, I can't see a future for this, even as a freelancer, where I can rely on these outlets to maintain and exist and be a viable place for written journalism and criticism. And I'd been looking at the newsletter model, and I'd also been looking at the podcast model, and I realized that I hate podcasts.
Same. And
my main problem with podcasting, for my perspective, is like, I would do a podcast tomorrow if I felt that I had an idea that was worth doing. Mm. And I have yet to come up with an idea that I think is worth doing. So there's that.
Okay.
But a newsletter seemed way more interesting to me as a writer. And so I would say, here's all these, I get pitches from publicists, is, you know, some of the biggest publicists out there, as well as individuals who are just kind of hustling for their friends. And it's like, there's so much stuff I can't cover. There's so much stuff that I can't get paid to write about, but that mm-hmm. I care about, that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And I've spent a lot of time trying to do it. So that's a long way of getting to a newsletter became a place where I could leverage my social media following and say, hey, you like what I write. Here's a way to read more about that and read about the stuff that I care about. Mm-hmm. And I'll give it to you. I started out just once a week. We're up to twice a week now. And then there's a couple bonus posts for those who pay, but it's a free newsletter. And it just hits the inboxes on Sunday. And there's always three album recommendations and a throwback video and a Q&A with some artist. And then I rant a little bit about something, and it just mm-hmm. keeps it interesting for me. And it's good. It's good writing exercise. But as the mm-hmm. response has been good, we got to over 1,000 subscribers in less than 6 months, which is pretty good by whatever artificial standard I set for myself.
Gary, what projects are you working on that you're, you know, excited about that's about to drop? I know journalists are always sitting on about 5 different projects that slowly leak out. What are you working on right now?
It's weird because, like, in the middle of a pandemic, there's just vastly less work.
Right.
And
right.
So I've been doing a few things here and there. The biggest thing that I'm working on right now, which I haven't announced, and I assume that the millions of people listening to your show will be excited to hear. I'm planning on doing a special edition zine for Cabbages to hopefully publish later this summer or early fall. That's going to be, I've done 3 pretty extensive interviews for it with 3 pretty amazing artists.
Awesome.
And so, like, feature length interviews. And so I'm working on that right now. And that's going to be a project I'm going to put out. I'll do a digital version, and I'll probably do a limited print run version. And because I've always saw newsletters in the context of zines, because that's
right. Exactly.
Because I'm an old man. And so I go, ah, zines, that's something I understand. Yeah, podcast, right. That's like a radio show. Like, that's where my fucking brain goes.
Same.
Fake radio.
Yeah, it's just like, it's great. It's great. You know, so I like that idea of a way of doing that. And I feel like the readership of the newsletter might be interested in something that's more than just kind of a bite-sized thing you read on a Sunday, maybe something that you get in the mail and you get, you know, you're excited mm-hmm. to have it and to hold it. So I'm excited to do that. I haven't announced it anywhere before here, so there's your exclusive.
Sick. World drop premiere.
I'm assuming you guys have a soundboard or something where you just like, there you go. Thank you. That's a soundboard.
Yes,
that's
of
good.
Course.
That's good.
I've always wanted to do a zine. I've tried to treat the podcast and the community that's formed around the podcast like I would a zine's audience. Like, we sent everybody stickers last year. We did little t-shirts. Like, I'm still forming it, but maybe I'll steal some good ideas from you when you get your zine out. I really like that idea. And like, I wasn't a super zine guy. Like, I didn't collect them or anything, but I really like the photocopy aesthetic and the kind of like the idea of the zine. So that's super interesting. I'm really looking forward to that. Can we talk about MWE a little bit? And would you mind telling the people what that is? And they only have 8 months to get ready for the next one.
Yeah, you got time. That time is there. It feels that, although, you know, it depends on how much longer any of us are in quarantine. Basically, sees how long that feels. But MWE is a music writer exercise. It's a hashtag challenge that I've been doing on Twitter for, I think, 30, 40 years now. And I think it's closer to 7 or 8. I don't really know offhand. It's been a while, but like, it's been like 7 years. And what it is, it's a challenge that exists in the month of February, where I ask people to pick, to listen to 1 album a day for the month, different album each day that they've never heard before and write one tweet about it, basically writing about it. It could be reviewing it, commenting about some aspect of it, whatever. It's just, it's a writing exercise. It's there for if you want, if you're a professional music critic or you're an aspiring one or you're just a music lover. And it, that kind of democratization has been the key behind it. Because it happens during Black History Month, I've always encouraged everybody who participates to include Black artists. I have seen some folks who actually go the full mile and make it entirely Black artistry for their picks, which I think is great. I keep for myself a running list of just what I've done. So I know, like, if I look at my list and I say, wow, there's no women on this list, then you're doing something wrong. Yeah. Wow, yeah. I've only included, you know, male artists, you know, and I'm not using nearly enough female artists, you know, things like that. So it's stuff for my personal stuff to keep me in check. But I've let people, I'm not policing what people choose. I'm just trying to get people to write about music and that, and to engage with it in a different way. And so that's yeah. the key. That's the key. And it's been a fun thing to do. It's one of the few positive things I do online. And I think that people really respond to it. And then they get suckered into following me on Twitter when they realize, oh no, that's, yeah. we didn't sign up for this.
I was like, I was just reviewing Tori Amos. I didn't want to know about No Money Bail.
No, it's like, I'm like, I'm going to tell you about cash bail, motherfucker. I'm going to tell you about defund the police. It's I'm not gonna hide that. And fuck J. Cole. I'm gonna say all those things. You're gonna go, I just wanted to hear about music.
Yeah, yeah. That is
I found amazing. It really instructive and it really helped me. I don't wanna say get through a block because I still never finish anything, but it was cool to just do the discipline of listening to an album a day, whether I got to the tweet or not. I think this was two Februarys ago, and I think I trailed off around the 18th. As I'm sure a lot of people do. I just couldn't keep up the pace. But I liked the idea of the thing you've never heard of. And I was like, not that you've never heard of, the thing you've never heard. And I was like, I have all these preconceived notions about these records. I need to actually listen to them. Mm-hmm. I was a record store guy, so I heard a lot of music. But there's just little gaps, like kind of like missing tooths in the smile where I wanted to go and like really listen. And so it was cool. It was fun. I plan to do it again. In February.
Yeah, I think it's just, if you're writing about music in any way, I think it's important to kind of try to identify your blind spots. And that exercise for me has been a good one on that front. Like, I've learned so much more about jazz over the years, and that exercise has been one of the avenues for that. Where, you know, I knew jazz primarily in the context of either Latin jazz, because that was the kind of stuff my father might play in the house when I was a kid, and then in the context of who did folks like Large Professor and DJ Premier sample.
Right.
You know.
Right.
It's like Queensbridge is, you know, basically a 20-minute walk from where I live. So it's just like that first Nas album is exactly that. That's my context for jazz growing up. And so understanding kind of more about that and how important it is beyond a chopped up sample or a loop has been enlightening to me over the past several years. And when you say, okay, I'm going to learn as much as I can about, you know, post-bop.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to learn as much as I can about soul jazz. I'm going to learn as much as I can about these different periods or these particular artists. And I think it just makes you more well-rounded so that when you hear an artist in maybe your main swim lane, let's say your swim lane is hip hop, and you hear something in that music and they sample something, it makes you a better writer, critic, listener to that. You know, no, I go back to No Name. Like, I called No Name's albums, those to me are jazz albums. And I got flack for some of that from jazz musicians who were just like, how is that a jazz album? Because, you know, whenever we're talking praise of a woman in a way that's not conventional, it's just going to lead to somebody puffing out their fucking chest. And it's like, I felt like knowing what I knew, it's like there was that aesthetic there. You know, I think if somebody called Illmatic a jazz album, people might be more receptive to that context and asking why that's okay and No Names is not okay is the question that has the very obvious answer. But again, it's about context. And I think the more you know about music, the more you understand that.
Dope. That's super dope. So is your goal then to like just stand on the dead carcass of hip hop journalism and kind of just democratize the whole thing? Because all the projects you're talking about seem to kind of be sort of a middle finger to the hip hop journalism industrial complex. Like, do it yourself, everybody write. Is that an ethos for you, or is that just something that's just how you're wired?
I'm pro writer, and I think that's probably the easiest way to put it. Probably the least offensive way to put it is I'm pro writer. Is I think that there are some hugely talented people out there, and then there are a whole bunch of folks who never get the opportunity to do any real good work because they get no mentoring and they get no support. And as we hear more and more about what's going on at Complex, what's going on at Pitchfork, what's going on in all these places, it's like, no wonder we're not getting name recognition hip hop journalists anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, we're getting personalities, you know. Right. It's great that Joe Budden was able to pivot it to something that wasn't hip hop. It's great that he found another avenue for himself because he's the weakest in Slaughterhouse. So it's important. It's important to find something else that you're good at. I've done music before. I don't think I'm a particularly good musician in context. I think I'm a much better writer. Sure. So, you know, I think in any band that I've ever been in, I've been the weakest link in those bands. That's fine. So my feeling is the industry is failing. Yeah. These legacy media outlets, as well as things that are more recent, are showing their true colors or otherwise being bought and picked over by these vultures. And at the end of the day, I think that there is enough talent out there who can take what they've learned so far and find a new avenue, that those who really care about the writing aspect of this and not in the maybe I might meet Drake someday aspect of this, deserve that opportunity. And I think that democratizing tools like Substack, which is what I use for my newsletter. They don't pay me, so don't worry about that. It's not an endorsement in that respect. But like these sorts of democratizing tools, what podcasting offers, what MailChimp or Substack or any of these other platforms have for newsletters, I think that it gives an avenue for folks to grow themselves beyond the conventional. Because I don't necessarily know whether Complex is going to be here 10 years from now. I don't necessarily know if Vice is going to look anything like what Vice is, you know, 10 years from now. And I think that the reality of the writing life is that we need to start exploring avenues that don't involve corporate ownership. Mm. And we may find that it creates great writers. You know, there are some folks who I think are doing exceptional work in the system, and those are folks who I'm happy to boost. You know, I think somebody like Craig Jenkins at Vulture is doing an extraordinary job. And I'm not just saying that because he drinks me under the table sometimes. You know, I think there are some amazing people. Taylor Crumpton is fantastic. There are some genuinely fantastic people out there. And there are also some folks who deserve the chance to grow. So they're not going to do that by getting staff jobs or internships at companies that are generally going to favor white supremacy at the end of the day.
Mm. Yep.
Not for hip hop. I mean, I'm sure it works for country. Sure, it works for rock and roll, but it doesn't work for hip hop.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's why these artists don't want to fuck with those places. It's why those artists shit on those places. Mm-hmm. Like, why should we, you know, why should they work with us? You know, if we're representing this outlet, if this outlet writes articles that don't get it. And the reason why they don't get it is because they put the wrong person on, or they didn't properly work with the person who wrote that piece. And now that's the stain. Mm-hmm. That's the stain. We just go, well, I'm never going to work with this fucking place. Yeah, makes sense.
Yep.
Yep. True. Man, very, very insightful stuff. What is, pivoting a little bit here, mm-hmm. what are some of the newer records that that you are really hyped about? We had Armin Hammer on last week. We're all super big on Shrines. Love to get your opinion on that record. And like, what other new things are clicking for you?
I mean, Shrines is amazing.
Can one of them be the Koreatown Oddity so I can have someone to talk about it with?
Oh, good, because that was what I was going to say, actually. The Koreatown Oddity record, A Little Dominique's Nosebleed. I've been a Koreatown Oddity fan for a real long time. And back when he was working with Roz G, rest in peace, on the Five Chuckles project. The Five Chuckles project, if you haven't heard Five Chuckles, like after you listen to The Little Dominique's Nosebleed, which is one of the best albums I've heard all year, Go back to that, because that album is brilliant. It's Roz G on the beats, Koreatown Oddity on vocals, and it's just like, it is a trip. It's like, I went back to it the other day because I remembered how much I enjoyed that project. And it was like songs about doing acid at Disneyland and tracks about an amazing, one of the best tracks about getting pulled over or stopped by the cops for smoking weed in public. And it's just like, it's like the narrative of that. And it's fucking like, it's this like, because Koreatown Oddity is also a comedian. He's also a stand-up.
Oh, so
he applies a sense of humor to it. But he has, you know, I think he's in his mid-30s or something. He has a clear understanding of hip-hop history as well. Mm. It's a brilliant album. It's worthy of Stone's Throw's best catalog works. It will rank, if I do a ranking this year of best albums, which I sometimes do, I usually just reserve all that for the outlets that pay me for that sort of schlocky content, because it's popular, so it's good.
Right.
It's going to be high on my
Every
list.
Every time we call anything the best, it gets higher ratings than if we try to have a nuanced conversation.
Yeah. So Koreatown Oddity, one of the best albums of 2020 so far.
There
you go.
Can I run something by you, Gary? I'm workshopping this, and I will workshop it on you. It's kind of like a Quasimodo album, but that's a cartoon and it's remade with like in live action. Like it has that similar like sense of forward motion. Like he goes and gets into adventures and says funny things about it. And then he kind of moves away. Does that resonate with you at all?
I just keep thinking about when they tried to make that Major Lazer cartoon, which is just one of the most garbage things I've ever seen in my life. And I love the guys from Major Lazer. Like I think Walshy Fire is a gifted and underrated artist, because unfortunately he has to stand next to Diplo all the time, but he is brilliant. And that Major Lazer cartoon was hot garbage.
Okay, I don't disagree with that. I'm really,
so you have to tread lightly. You have to tread lightly.
I gotcha. I hadn't really listened to him at all, and I did not understand what his deal is. I just put it on this weekend because I wanted to investigate. And I was blown away by a lot of the things you said, where how reference dense it is. And that's a thing that really resonates with me as a listener. If I feel like I'm getting it and I'm like, oh, he has a track on there where it's about basically growing up in the early to mid 80s, about like watching Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and like things we used to eat and like clothing brands and like stuff. I was just like, holy shit, this guy grew up exactly like I did. Like I could not be identifying with a track more than this. So yeah, it's a really dope album. I'm glad you ended up bringing that up totally organically. Yeah. And
and let me actually, I want to throw something else, another thing in there that I think is less known, but I highly recommend it, especially for folks who are fans of MF Doom, and that's Blue, BLOO, and Spanish Ran put out an album called MF Blue, which is a salute to the vaudeville villain himself. It's Spanish Ran is one of the best producers out there right now that most people don't know.
Okay.
His style is very New York, very real, and Blue is a terrific artist. He's a terrific rapper to be working with him on this project. Together, they made one of the best projects, tapes, I don't know what you call these things anymore, of the year. I think it's a brilliant project, and I've used my platform with Cabbages to try to push it and that people be aware of it. But anybody listening to this who wants to hear a hip hop album that none of these corporate hip hop media outlets are ever going to write about, it's that one. And I think that the sooner that folks get onto Spanish Ran as a producer and understand what he's doing, because he's putting out so many projects, as soon as they get into that, they're going to understand, like, okay, this is like, remember when everyone figured out about what Griselda was? And I was like, oh, Griselda's good. Yeah, Griselda has been good. You know, it's like they're going to be like that with Spanish Ran. And if they don't, that's going to be a real tragedy.
Dope. That's awesome. Wow. We got some homework to do. I think that's new for all of us. So that's dope.
Get your pens out.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So cabbages every Sunday. Is that when
every Sunday I do a links roundup on Thursdays of my, what I think is the best, hip hop articles that came out during the week from other writers. And then okay. Sunday is all me and my big fat mouth.
All right. So if folks want to get on your mailing list, how do they do that?
Easy. So they can either go to my Twitter, and it's always there pretty prominently. My Twitter is NoYokoNo, NoYokoNo, mm-hmm. or they can take that at NoYokoNo, NoYokoNo.substack.com is how to get there directly. But I'm always pushing it. So if you okay. get to my Twitter, you're going to see it within a matter of minutes.
Okay, awesome. So it's not NoYokoOno?
No, you see, that would require another O.
Ah. I always read it like that. Okay. Yeah. This is why you have to actually talk to people.
Yeah. This is why I feel like it's a public
service. NoYokoNo. I've been just like the sonance of that has been wrong in my head now for years. Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
See, this is what we get to the bottom of on Dad Bod Rap Pod. We want to thank you, Gary, for joining us, man. Definitely would love to have you back on the program again to agitate and talk long shit. And
yeah.
That's
thanks, what man. I do.
Yo, right,
thanks for having me.
Thank you again, Gary.
Thanks for stopping all by. Right. Nice to meet you.
Appreciate David, you did like, David, did they let you talk on this podcast at all? Or
no.
I feel like they'd really crowd you out.
I just transcribed what you guys talk about. So
okay, good. All right. Well, thanks for having me again.
Yo, thank you again for all your help recently as well, Gary. Appreciate
all right, no worries.
Okay. Yeah, so we want to thank Gary Suarez, Cabbages newsletter, for coming on. Wonderfully acerbic. I like when you talk to somebody and then they match their Twitter persona.
Totally. It was good to get him on. It's very much like, to your point, very much Twitter persona. And, you know, it's good to have somebody on here to shoot the shit with us who's mad honest and mad real. And, you know, he was talking about his 2 decades in music journalism, which sort of aligns with mine. I've been doing it for about 20 years too. So it's good to talk to another head who's been in the game for so long. Yeah, shout out to Gary.
We appreciate him coming on, gave us a couple jewels to check out for as we look at our going towards the album of the year stuff. But the program does not stop there. We have another dope interview lined up for you guys. You are going to hear from just a cool ass cat who's pretty much worked with everybody in the rap industry. Goes by the name of Jake One. Out of Seattle, somebody who's maybe if we did an over under segment, he would probably be savagely underrated.
Absolutely.
As a producer, you would say?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, given his expansive body of work through so many years and his sort of lack of regionalism, like he's working with all kinds of cats from all kinds of backgrounds and has been doing it and kind of quietly doing it.
Yeah, you know? Very quiet.
So to your point, yeah, man, he is, I think, vastly underrated unless people have just straight up have heard of him.
Yeah, yeah, we were very fortunate to be able to chop it up with them. Very affable dude, gave us some interesting backstories. So without further ado, here is our interview with the mighty Jake One. All right, Dad Bod Rap Pod back once again here in the Temple of Zoom, bringing you podcast content throughout the quarantine. And we're very pleased to have a dope guest on the program. We did a little bit of research, and by we mean Nate did, and we found out that this person has produced for every living rapper. That exists right now.
We're so close.
So on the line or in the Zoom, we have Jake One. How's it going, man?
It's going pretty good, man. It's nice day out here in Seattle for once.
Nice.
Yeah. No, it looks pretty deluxe. As a all my family, I have a lot of family in Seattle, and there's like 2.5 months where the shit is the most beautiful place known to man.
It tricks people when they come out here at this time, because they think it's going to be nice during the winter, and not.
Like, nah.
I went the winter once. We live for this right now. This is why I endure the fucking rain, so.
Right on, man. Well, thanks for taking some time out of a beautiful Pacific Northwest day to rap with us. So, we are kind of going through your producer credit kind of discography, but can you tell us, like, what was the first placement you got where you were like, this shit is real? Like, what was that first one where you were like, oh, okay, I'm on now?
I don't know, man. Because I had gotten a lot of songs placed and didn't quit my job till, I want to say, like 2006.
Okay.
But I would say the one that I got that made the most noise, where it was like, oh yeah, people like what I do, is De La Soul, Rock Cocaine Flow.
Oh, okay.
That was definitely the first one that, like, I was like, oh okay, maybe I am good at this, and you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, amazing song. I feel like when I heard that, I hadn't really heard anything like it before, and it's still really a favorite. And I know you and Dave are doing a little thing on that, so we don't have to do it today. But just like, yeah, like, props.
Thank
man.
You.
Yeah, beautiful, beautiful track. Really interesting time and all that. Yeah, we were tripping off the range. It's like you've got Underground 12 Inches on Connected, and you've got Rick Ross featuring Dre and Jay-Z. And that's not really a question either. It's just more, I guess, do you tailor the beat to the situation, or do you just make a bunch of beats and then try to get them into the right hands?
It's very rare that I make anything and specifically for anybody. Tuxedo is probably the only thing I do where it's like, this could really only be for this. Everything else is just a fucking crapshoot. And a lot of times I might have somebody in mind for a beat and they don't even like it. So at this point, honestly, I don't even know anymore. I'm 44 years old. Like, I feel like I'm so out of touch. Even with some of the stuff I end up working on, I'm just like, oh, that's what you guys wanted. And it makes me go back and make more like whatever it was that worked sometimes. But no, I wouldn't say, you know, maybe if I'm doing like a whole project with somebody, I might be like, oh, they sound good on this kind of beat. But even that, I just haven't had a lot of success when, because I get these calls like, Beyonce's working, blah, blah, blah. And it just, I'm not good at that kind of stuff, you know. I'm just not.
No.
Well, hey, Jake, I wanted to sort of circle back. Obviously, you're from Seattle, but you know, you're not one of those dudes who hyper like claim their location, right? Because I mean, and you've worked with so many different people, but we're from the Bay, and I want to just get the backstories on your production work with Casual from Hyro, as well as
Casual
Gifted Gab from Blackalicious.
Right. The Gab album came about because a good friend of mine from Seattle was road managing Blackalicious at that time. My boy Jay Moore, RIP, and like he was on the tour bus and he would just play my beats on the tour bus. He was just that kind of dude. I would never do that if I was in his situation. but thank God he was that person. He's the one that even connected me with De La, a bunch of stuff, really, really close homie. Gab actually came to Seattle. We recorded that all here. I want to say,
oh wow,
I don't even remember what year that was, but I know I had a job. I was going there like after work, and you know, we were just taking them around, showing them all the stuff here. Me and Vitamin D produced the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it was funny with him because he was looking to do something very different than Blackalicious, and I think he thought what we were doing was like gonna be like something you could play in a club and shit like that, and I was thinking, nah, it's probably not gonna happen either. He thought he was doing like some commercial. That was not what it was. I think the ill thing with Gab is he was just like so genuine, and what he would might even have that as a goal, and it would never turn out that way. Like, just could not help but be him, you know?
Right.
And that's probably why people like the record. But it was also kind of a weird thing where you're like, when you come in and do something like that where people are used to like a certain sound him rapping on, there's like, they're not fucking with you at the same time, like the traditional fans of that music. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a lesson, like, just picking the right shit to do sometimes. I felt like even though we made a good record, it didn't really hit the people who might have liked it. And his mm-hmm. fans, or like some of the Black Alicious fans, were turned off by it because it had like keyboard bass and shit like that. Yeah, they didn't want that. You know what I mean?
It slapped. Yeah.
Yeah. It yeah. yeah. So there's a certain aesthetic, a certain underground hip hop, especially in those days. I feel like all that's out the window. I don't think it even exists anymore. But yeah, back then it was like very, you're on one side of the fence or the other, you know.
I'm a reformed backpacker. We talk about this on the show.
Yeah, I mean, we all
back
are.
Then I had rules and now I don't. Now I just like what I like, and I right. saved all these cool projects for myself because I was like, oh, that's not it. And now I listen, I'm like, oh, this is amazing.
Yeah, and I don't know if like because we had a scene here as far as hip hop, but nobody was really successful. So we kind of drew from a lot of things. Like I liked a lot of East Coast stuff, but I also was playing RBL and Totally Insane and
right.
4-on-5, all that stuff was equally as important because it was what everybody around was playing.
Right. So, right.
You know, I feel like the guys that end up making beats out of here ended up having a different thing that was a little unique as far mm-hmm. as that.
Well, yeah. Speaking of dude. Backpack, I mean, the project with Casual, can you sort of break that down a little bit?
When I actually quit my job in 2006, I actually moved to Oakland for like a year.
Oh, and, did I know that. Okay.
Yeah, I think I had done the stuff with Encore for Hyro, and I was just friends with those guys. So I would go over there and hang out, and Casual was just a dude I was a fan of. My boy ID was working there, Ian Davis. And yeah, I don't know. I just gave him a bunch of beats and, you know, we kind of worked on it and then I moved and just kind of fell by the wayside and he just ended up kind of putting it together later on. Mm. But I always just thought he was really underrated. I just loved his attitude mm-hmm. At rapping. He was just an entertaining dude to be around in general.
Oh yeah.
Like, you get into these like phases. Like I feel like when I was there, he got really into fishing. Out of nowhere, like, you'd just be doing that all the time, you know.
Perfect segue here. I was listening to the Casual thing today, and I listened to White Van Music yesterday. And Cash's track on White Van Music is hot, dude. It's like you guys sounded so good on that, and he was just like so swagged out. He was just naming all the rappers that he
right.
that he said fucks with him, and then ripping these incredible verses. Right. So let's talk about White Van Music a little bit. I just have to say, and I'm not here to like, you know, like blow you up or anything, but like it's perfectly put together. Like,
thank you, man.
Every little, when you threw in a little vocal sample, when you like referred back to things, like when you have Doom come back again, like it's just as right. a comp and or a producer album. I don't know how you think of it, and I'd love to hear kind of what your take on that is. Like it has a cohesiveness and a quality to it that a lot of those things really lack, where they're kind of all over the place. So I know I listened to that when it came out, but I went back to it yesterday and it's just really, really well put together, from like the beats to the artwork to the verses that were commissioned and placed. So good on you. And like, can you tell us a little bit about how that all came about?
That album really was just kind of me trying to go back to the backpacker that I probably still am to this day. And like I was at that point, I kind of got my break, and I was doing like a lot of stuff with 50 and Young Buck and all of G-Unit and just various other commercial-esque things, just my version of it. Mm-hmm. And I just got tired of like I would send them beats that would have like scratch hooks and shit. I don't know why I thought they would use it, but I just didn't care. I'd put like scratch or breakdown in there or something. And I remember they'd be like, man, you got to take all this shit out of it. Like, nobody wants to rap on that. So it was just kind of, I just wanted to do something for myself, you know, because that other stuff was like my first time trying to navigate making a living doing this. And even when I would try to do something, I felt like where I was selling out, it never really turned out that way. I just, you know, it didn't quite work out that way. But the album was like a lot of songs I did for people for their albums that they didn't use for whatever reason. And then once I had kind of a good group of songs, I started getting people that I was friends with. And I mean, I just did it with no limitations. And I really did want to put like people wouldn't, you know, make sense on Rhymesayers. I just thought that was really funny to put like, Young Buck on a Rhyme series or Lister, whoever else I had on there at the time that didn't make any sense of what people's, you know, idea of what that was supposed to be.
Right.
So that was really kind of all that was. And, you know, it did pretty well. Unfortunately, I just got so flagrant with the sampling and scratches. I got sued like, you know, a bunch of times, and it just like kind of killed off the momentum a little bit. And, you know, there's been times I'm like, yeah, I should do part two, and I'll do a couple songs. And it just – I just end up doing – you know, I'll send people beats, and then they'll just use it for their project.
Right.
And it's just – it just kind of feels like a better use of it to get a bigger light on whatever I'm doing. But who knows?
Again,
I
mean, if for no other reason –
I still have a bunch of songs, you know.
I was just going to make a joke. Like, you should do it again if for no other reason than the Seattle track that's kind of towards the end.
Right.
None of the Seattle teams had started winning yet. So it's kind of
down. we lost a team, first of all. But, yeah, the Seahawks won. And that was just so strange that, like, we actually won in something. It kind of made that part of the song invalid, but
Dude was funny. He's like, "We got the Seahawk blues. We watched the Seahawks lose." I was like, "Wait, are we watching the same thing?"
We were so shitty at everything, but it's funny. I looked at that video recently, and like, it's just crazy. I mean, it was whatever 10 years ago, and a bunch of those guys are like adults now. You know, they were kids like when I did that video, and I mean, pretty much anybody from here from that time was in there. From your Macklemore on down. And, you know, I don't even think I invited him to the video. He just showed up. That's my boy, but no.
That's hilarious. Jake, you know, on topic of white van music, we got to talk a little bit about Doom and just sort of how you guys exchanged the music and how you guys linked up and how he is as a character and you know, somebody, a collaborative.
That was really all Sadiq from Rhymesayers. Like, you know, I feel like I knew more KMD than I knew MF Doom. Like, I definitely listened to the Operation Doomsday and stuff like that. But they were trying to make records with him that didn't have samples because they just kept getting sued like crazy at that time. So a lot of those songs we made purely with under the guise of like, we're making stuff to get licensed or whatever. And then we just ended up using all the songs and they turned out good.
Okay.
But I made most of those beats down in Oakland with G Coop, who's like, he's a big producer now. He did Bad and Bougie and some other ones. And it's just funny because I only met him one time and it was brief. It was like probably the last show he did in America at Soundset. And he had like a bunch of police with him and shit. It was so strange. He sent out the Doom poster first. Like,
no way.
Yeah, and then like the thing, the Doom poster smoke started coming out the mask, and then he ran up there and he might have did Ball Skin. I don't know. It was very strange, the whole thing. The crowd did not get it. They didn't know what was going on. It's like, why are there two guys with a mask on stage and one of them on the ground? This is weird. But yeah, I mean, I have some other songs with him that I think are going to come out relatively soon. It's really, you know, Sadiq is. From Rhymesayers is the one that really seems to be able to get him to do whatever it is. And there'd just be funny things about working with him. Like a lot of the beats I make when I send them out, it'll be like a minute 30 or something. Cause I don't want to hear the beat play that long after a while. I'm just tired of it. And I noticed he would just rap to the end of the beat. Like, so then I was like, maybe if I send him like something that's 3 minutes, he's going to keep rapping. And he totally did. So there was like a going, and yeah, I learned my lesson. Like every time I send him a beat, I send it really long, just to.
I'm about to say, yeah.
More action out of him.
That's dope, man.
Super dope. So, is there a? We asked. I'm asking this because we've had really a couple artists from Seattle on. Do you feel like there's a sound or a vibe from the artists that are coming out of Seattle?
I don't know, man, because I think it's so all over the board. I always identify with the sound of the stuff in the 90s when I was a kid, and it was really underground stuff. There was this group called Tribal that was really dope. It was definitely the guys I was with at that era that I was hanging out with, and I like their stuff the best. It's definitely like some somber, kind of sad, earthy shit, I guess. I don't know. there's a lot of different kind of people. So, I mean, we have Lil Mosey now, and I don't really think of him as, like, making Seattle-esque music, but right. he's from here, and, you know, he was inspired by this. So, you know, Macklemore, I don't think is being, like, he's kind of created this own thing that whatever that is, you know, it's like kind of pop rap, but then it's kind of hip hoppy at times. I don't know.
Where is Macklemore?
He's
right
over
here.
The hill. Actually, he lives like maybe a mile away from me.
No way. Oh, that's
yeah. Yeah. I see him. I see him around a lot still.
Can I ask you kind of a weird question, and I've never asked anyone this before, but I feel like I can try this out on you, and we'll see how it goes. Do you think there's such a thing as a perfect beat?
No. Not from the producer side, because everything I do, I'll listen to it later on, I'm like, I could have did that better or whatever. But as a fan, yeah, there's a bunch of them to me.
Right. No, that's why I wanted to get into it, because I was like, I had doing this whole thing yesterday. Like, it's like baking. Like, you could put just the right amount of baking powder and just the right amount of flour, and like, yeah, your croissant will be perfect. But if you leave it in the oven for 5 minutes too long, you've ruined the mathematical perfection right. of it, and you've taken it into this realm of like it has to be philosophically perfect. And I just you seem like a craftsman, so I just wanted to see like if the numbers are all right, but something. Is a little
just,
off. Like how
it
you
just has
it.
To feel right. Like there's things that I work on for a long time that just still is just not right. And some of the best ones I ever did, they just click. So, I mean, I think it's tricky, man. And then there's like a more modern style where the beat like switches like 5 million times and shit.
Yeah.
And maybe I might like just one of those beats out of the five. So I only get it for 40 seconds, whereas before, if I'm listening to Gangster, I'm getting the same two bars for 3 minutes, you know?
Right.
Just say Mad Lib.
but then it's also like there's even a whole other school, and I have some younger homies that are like, they're not record guys, but then they tell me about records and loops, and I'm like, but you don't even have records, you don't even know this. You know, it's like,
yeah,
I'm not gonna like be as proud of a beat I make if I just play the record, even if it turns into a dope song. That's great, we all want to do that, but on some like artistry, you just don't feel proud. And you know, there's like, if I was at Alchemist's, I don't know, before all this shit happened, the quarantine, and you know, we were fucking laughing about, you know, take the drums off like for a good like 2 hours. And then I was trying to think, like, there's no like underground songs that people like that have drums. Like if it's underground, it can't have drums, or the drums got to be dumb low in the mix. So it's like, we're just in a weird space. And then the modern shit is all drums, you know, the hot records are. Yeah. So it's like, it's almost like a line in the sand, you know, and I would have never thought that would be the thing. Like,
right.
You know, to literally just not put drums on the beat. That's the hot shit. Like,
could have saved yourself a lot of time.
I know. What was I doing trying to get good at drums all these years?
go ahead, Demo.
So, but while we're on the subject of a perfect beat, what's a perfect beat to you? Like, what is an example of a beat that you're like, that is absolutely perfect?
It's tricky because there's beats that like I have of friends of mine that are, you know, obviously some of the best producers ever, that I just love the beat. Nobody even rapped to it, or it might not even have been a good song.
Okay.
And then there's ones that I feel like the lyrics make the beat better. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'd say something like Group Home Superstar. Like, I just love that beat. I love this as I heard it.
Yeah,
it never gets tired to me. It's just perfect. It's like, it's probably two instruments. Was it just the break and the sample, and that's it?
Yep.
But it's perfect to me. And you know, people like to criticize the group home for
that. Was my next question. do the group home add or detract from that song?
I think they add to it. I'm not gonna say how bad they are, but just the, nobody else would say some of that shit but them.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just because I love that album so much, I'm just look past all that. But it added to the it's like there's just a comedy to it unintentionally that I love, you know?
Yeah.
And Premier picks rappers based on their voices. He's not like, what are your bars? I mean, he might say that, but he don't give a shit about that. I don't either.
Really? Like you it's tone of voice?
Yeah, it's all tone and voice and flow. And then, if people got good lyrics, that's great too, obviously. Mm-hmm. But that's first and foremost. Like, I never could really get into guys that had a weird voice or their rhythm was fucked up. That was never really the guys I was into.
That's so dope. We were going through your long list of people you've collaborated with, and pretty much we were joking that you've worked with everybody. But who haven't you worked with that you would love to just, lace a beat for?
There's some I've done stuff for, it just hasn't come out.
Oh, really?
Like, I did one for Eminem that didn't come out. I did one. Wow. I've done multiple for Kendrick that haven't come out. Hasn't been the right thing. Who's the one I really want to work with at this point? Kanye is another one. I did songs for him. They just haven't been used yet.
Wow.
Not a rapper, but I just want Charlie Wilson on the next Tuxedo album. That's all I've been trying to speak into existence. So okay. We're going to have to pay him whatever he needs and make that happen.
Okay. Uncle Charlie.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about Tuxedo. It might be a little bit outside the realm of the construct we use for the show.
Right.
Like aging hip hoppers or whatever, but it seems like the thing where you have the most fun just from the outside.
I mean, Tuxedo was just a thing we did fucking around and it just caught, which, I think that's always the best feeling.
That's two of those for Mayor Hawthorne, huh?
Right. Exactly. He just needs he needs to not take anything seriously, clearly. Yeah, I don't know. It was just something we were messing around with. And, as somebody that never really was a musician or anything like that, I just think it's hilarious that I'm playing keys and singing backgrounds. Like, we're playing for 1,000, 2,000 people sometimes. And just sometimes I'll be up there what the fuck? How did this happen? And there's people that only love that and don't even know about my hip hop side. And then vice versa,
Right.
So,
right.
And I've had some big rappers. Be like, man, what's this, the wedding band thing you doing? Like, this just seems like it's popping.
That's how,
it's been cool, man. I don't know. I think just doing something without expectations just kind of brought that back home for me. Like, just do the shit you love and let the rest of it figure itself out.
Right, right. Can you talk a little bit about the connection with Dre's production team? And sort of how that came about. I read a little bit about it, but not too much info exists. So can you just
Right. shed a little bit of light on that? Well, there was a time where I just felt like I wasn't supposed to talk about it because, it seemed like people were getting fired. But I never moved down there. I stayed in Seattle. Anyways, I had done some songs. There were some beats he liked and they recorded to him. It was actually around the time we did White Band Music. And it was really weird because I think I was mixing, might have been The Truth in the studio. And the studio I was at had a really big picture of Dre on the wall. Mm. And then the guy I was dealing with after my call, he's like, Dre wants to talk to you. And then I put him on speakerphone because, there's people in the room. I'm like, he's really on the phone. So then it's like looking at him, and then he's talking to me. And, I end up doing a song deal with them. And, there's a bunch of songs I did that I'm sure never see the light of day.
Detox, and, basically.
Whatever it was. I've been around him multiple times, and it's weird, because that's he's one of the reasons I even make music. So before I even knew what a producer was or what a producer did. So I think at the time I did that too, it's like all the people that I wanted to be all came through that same kind of apprenticeship. Like, you went and sat in the studio with him and, he rapped on your beats and gave you the thumbs up. So I felt like I had made it in a way when I did that. Mm-hmm. I think that was 2010. So yeah, I don't know. I was in there, I went and saw him a year and a half ago, heard what he was working on, played some beats and left. That's how I like to do it. I don't really want to be the guy hanging out all day. I feel like it's better if I just pop in and out, be a little more elusive. But it's still a trip, and I've made a lot of friends from the other guys that are working there. Like, DJ Khalil is one of my really good friends, and he was really at that time doing all the shit. He did so many amazing records that never came out. It's like it makes me mad because I want to hear them again, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't get how you guys live with that. Like, you, right. you peek behind the curtain, then you just have to know this thing exists, like, for the rest of your life. And with him, it probably literally will never come out.
I think I recorded one of the songs on like a flip phone or something. But it was like, yeah, it was like a classic Snoop and Dre song. I think somebody leaked like 20 seconds of it a couple of years ago, which is, you know, whatever. I wish they would have leaked the whole thing because I just want the song.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like the thing he does is, you know, he'll pay for stuff that doesn't come out and nobody else does that. So it's like the combo of being, you know, just the honor of being able to be a part of that. The money, you're gonna, you know, something like Three Kings happened purely because of him. That was a Detox song, and that's how he got on Rick Ross's album. So, you know, it ended up working out for me. And you know, I definitely took some things from just being around and seeing how he works. He just works his ass off, and I don't know if I'm really doing that per se, but it's crazy all the accomplishments he's done. He just still loves it that much, you know. Just still loves music. That's all he knows. It's what, all he knows how to do is go to the studio. That's like his life.
Mm-hmm. Crazy.
You still buy records?
All day.
Nice.
Yeah. Quarantine has been, I mean, at this point, you know, if you've been buying records for whatever 20 some years, the things you want are just extremely hard to get. And you're just buying them on Discogs as a trophy at this point.
For sure. Right.
So I definitely still do that a lot. I mean, Tuxedo's been really big in Japan, so I've just been going fucking crazy out there the last 5 years because they just have the best record stores in the world. But yeah, records is still, that's one thing I still really enjoy as much as I did from when I started, you know?
So,
like, I still love it.
Yeah, you appear to have a very nice collection. Not that we're Instagram stalking you or anything.
I mean, it's going good.
Trying to read spines, zooming in.
I have, you know, a couple, like the dude that started me on records is this guy, Supreme. And he's got one of the best collections in the world. So, like,
yeah.
I'm always kind of feel like I'm chasing him. There's records that I saw at his house in the 90s, and I'll run into it and I'm like, damn, I've never seen this besides his house. Mm. It's like I almost have to buy it no matter the price.
Yeah.
On some weird, you know, mental shit.
Yeah, just to keep up.
Yeah, I mean, and then, I don't know, maybe it's because the circle of friends I have that I started buying records in that community, they're all getting older, so everybody has better jobs. And yeah. I feel like the money people spend on records is just, it would have been just totally unfathomable when I was younger. That
totally.
It feels like a $200 record isn't even expensive anymore, which is crazy.
I know, oh, I hear you. Well, I think the problem is the floor got raised because of all these, like, Crosley, New Jack, like, collectors. Like, every record is $40 because, like, Fleetwood Mac sells for $40 no matter what in a 10 seconds. And
that's just still, like, mind-blowing to me. It's like, what did they sell, 10 million of those things? Like, yeah. They're fucking everywhere.
It's not, yeah. It's not rare. By definition, it is not rare.
No, not at all.
Oh, man. So Jake, anything on the come up that you're working on that you're excited about? You know, you mentioned some beats that you made that haven't seen the light of day, but is there anything else floating out there
Like it's coming soon. I don't know, man. Nobody tells me anything. I just know like guys record the stuff and then it just sits in a stash and then it's like fucking Rap Olympics or Rap Lottery. You just kind of hope your song stays. It's weird. I've been doing a lot of R&B this year and it just wasn't really intentional, but that's been working well. So, you know, hopefully I'll do some more hip hop. I did do like a little remix album of kind of just random songs I wanted to remix that threw on Bandcamp. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I never like to even say what I do anymore until it comes out. Cause I just feel like I jinx it from not coming out.
Okay. I know how that
I think
feels.
I did that like in Scratch Magazine in the early 2000s, and I had everybody ask me, yo, what happened to the song you did with Nas? And I was like, oh, I didn't like it no more. Little crunchy, you know?
Oh, man. Well, Jake One, we really appreciate you coming on the program, man. It's been super cool. We'll be on the lookout for the projects that you are not going to tell us about, but that we will still readily enjoy, man. Just appreciate you sharing your time.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. Keep it up. I like the podcast for sure.
Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, all right, guys.
Take care.
Peace.
Dad Bod Rap Pod. That was our interview with Jake One. Cool ass cat. I kind of felt like we were just having beers. Like
100%. I can sort of see why all these rap dudes just want to kick it with him and, you know, listen to his beats. I mean, he's just so affable and cool and is never that dude who tries too hard. You know what I mean? But yet has like a tremendous fucking resume. So it was really good to have him on. And he just felt like one of us, you know, just cracking jokes. But also dude worked with like Dr. Dre and, you know, MF Doom. And yeah, man, it was really cool.
Yeah, we appreciate him coming on the program. Another dope interview. My challenge for us as a crew, and maybe it's just my challenge, but we should have in our at the ready an elevator pitch of the people we have interviewed on this program. I was fortunate enough to stop by a rap workshop hosted by Ad2 and Def C, who hopefully we'll have on the program soon, where they listen and critique, you know, up and coming rappers. And Def C lined me up like, oh man, this podcast is so amazing. Like they've done all these great interviews. Why don't you tell them about it, Damone? And I was like, but we do the Arm & Hammer. And for some reason, all I can ever think of is Dell. Like that's immediately that's where my mind goes. But everybody under 30 is like, who the fuck is that?
Oh, totally. Yeah. Totally. Yeah,
so I resolved after that call to be like, yo, I really got to take some time. We've done 124, you know, episodes, 100 plus interviews. I should know some of these people's names by now.
Dude, it's...
And they've been good.
For the most part, they've been really good interviews. And it's just, I mean, we have, it's an embarrassment of riches. We have such a good list now that I'm like, oh yeah, we talked to Easy Mo B and Roxanne Shanté like 100 episodes ago, you know?
Literally 100 episodes ago.
Good problem to have.
Yes. So let me encourage y'all to go back and check out some of our early episodes. I know we've picked up some new fans over the past season or so. I would definitely encourage you to go and check us out. I think we were still funny. I think we're figuring it out, but I think we were lightweight funny in the early episodes.
Totally. It's hard to be funny in these circumstances, but you guys always make me laugh, so thank you for that.
Yeah. And shout out to Gary Suarez for defending your honor by the fact we don't let you talk.
That's so hilarious. Even Gary can see, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Holding back Dave's talent.
Oh, just kidding, guys.
Dad Bod Rap Pod. You can check us out on all the places that you typically stream things. We are on Google Play, we're on Spotify. We are on SoundCloud. If you would like to help us not be broke forever, check us out on kiki.co.uk, our UK syndication partner. We are also a part of the Pantheon Podcast Network, 50 plus music-related podcasts. And we're one of a couple hip-hop shows on there. Glad to be rocking with them. You should check us out. I guess by the time this airs, we will have already done the questions. Hip-hop trivia IG thing. So hopefully if you follow our Twitter at Dad Bod Rap Pod, you'll see some stuff about what we did on with questions, hip-hop questions podcast, IG live. Nate is gonna wear an extra medium shirt to represent Beanie Man while he does his so we will be on there. And we're also on IG at Dad Bod Rap Pod. Perhaps maybe this collaboration with questions will get us to figure out how to do shit on IG live. I don't have high hopes for that, but we'll see. So yeah, that has been episode 124. We thank y'all for fucking with us. Per usual, new episode every Thursday. This is the Dad Bod Rap. We'll be right back.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.